All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're diving into a case, our Rhode Island Supreme Court case, that's going to be super relevant for all you law students out
It's
there.
definitely relevant, yeah.
So this is Cassina v. DePrepetrillo. It's from 2018. And it really digs into like the nitty-gritty of adverse possession claims, especially how those claims work when you bring in the whole summary judgment process.
Absolutely. It's a great illustration of how a case that on its face might seem pretty straightforward in terms of property law, someone using land for a long time.
Right, seems like open and shut.
Yeah, exactly. It can actually get really complicated because of these kind of thorny factual disputes that pop up.
And that's really what happened with Cosina. You have these, the Cosinas, they thought they had basically, established ownership of some land just because they've been using it for so long.
Yeah, they had a long history with this land.
But the court was like, hold on, not so fast. There are some serious questions about whether your claim is as solid as you think it is.
They were using it, they were putting up fences, they were maintaining it, doing all the things that, an owner would typically do.
Yeah, and for a while it seemed like, okay, well, that's that, right? They've got a good case.
You would think so.
But then the Supreme Court steps in and they're like, nope, we've got to unpack this a bit more.
Exactly. And we're going to, in this deep dive, figure out, what went wrong. Why did that initial win, that summary judgment, get completely flipped on its head? What are the big lessons here for understanding property law, but also how civil procedure plays out in these kinds of situations?
Perfect. So let's jump right in. So first, like, who are we even dealing with here? Who are these people and what was this whole land dispute about?
Okay, so we've got two sets of neighbors. You have the Cassinas. They own the property at 100 Paris Irons Road.
Got it.
And then their neighbors, the DiPietrios, owned 86 Paris Irons Road.
Okay.
And the whole fight was over two chunks of land that were part of the DiPietrillo's property, but the Cassinas were claiming they actually owned them. And they even had kind of these interesting names, Cheryl's Front Pasture and Cheryl's Back Pasture.
So I'm guessing the casinos weren't just like, taking a stroll through these pastures every now and then.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Like, what were they actually doing that made them think, hey, this is ours?
Their claim was all about how they had been using this land. And we're talking about a long time, like 36 years. And it wasn't just passive use. They were installing fences, they were maintaining those fences, and they were basically treating the land like any owner would.
So to them, it's like, well, we've been doing all the owner things for decades. It's basically ours by now,
That
right?
was their argument. Yeah, they were saying this long-term consistent use, that's enough to prove adverse possession, which essentially means that even though on paper this land belonged to the DiPietrillos, because the Cassinas had been using it in this way for so long, they had basically become the legal owners.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this gets messy. So the DiPietrillos just kind of let this go on for 36 years. They didn't notice.
Well, that's the thing. The DiPietrillos weren't actually around for that whole time. They bought their property in 2013.
Okay, so relatively new to the scene.
Exactly. And it was really them coming in, buying the property, that kind of kicked off this whole legal battle. They started questioning, hold on, what's going on with these pastures? Who actually owns them?
So they take it to court, right? What happens first?
So it goes to the Superior Court, and initially the Cassinas win. They're granted summary judgment.
So for those of us not familiar with all the legal jargon, what exactly does that mean? Summary judgment.
Basically, summary judgment is like this really powerful move you can make in court. It's essentially saying, look, the facts are so clear-cut here, and the law is so obviously on our side that there's no need to waste time with a whole trial.
So it's like a fast track to victory.
Exactly. And in this case, the trial court agreed with the Cassinas. They said, yeah, based on what we see, there aren't any big disagreements about the facts, and the law says the Cassinas should win.
But, spoiler alert, this is a Supreme Court case.
Right, there's always another level.
So I'm guessing things didn't end there.
Nope, not at all. The DiPietrillos, they weren't giving up. They appealed that Superior Court decision all the way up to the Rhode Island Supreme Court. And this is where things get really interesting.
What happened?
The Supreme Court, they basically said, hold on, slow down. They overturned that summary judgment.
Wow, so complete reversal.
Yeah, total 180. And what's even crazier is that the trial court had even tried to, like, really get to the bottom of things.
Yeah.
They ordered a new survey of the disputed land and even held an evidentiary hearing to try to figure out, like, where the property lines really were.
So they were putting in the effort.
They were. But then the Supreme Court comes in and says, you know what? That whole evidentiary hearing, that was a procedural no-no. They basically said, you can't do that when you're dealing with a motion for summary judgment.
Ah, okay. So there are rules even about how you figure out the facts.
Exactly. Procedure matters. So to really understand why the Supreme Court was so adamant about this, we have to dig into the weeds of adverse possession. Like, what does it even take to claim adverse possession in Rhode Island? What boxes do you have to check?
Right, because obviously the casinos thought they had checked those boxes, and the Superior Court agreed, at least at first.
Right, so under Rhode Island law, there are 7 very specific things you have to prove to win an adverse possession case.
7. Okay, that's a lot.
It is. And to make it even more complicated, you have to prove each of these things by what's called clear and convincing evidence.
So it's not just like, oh yeah, I think I used that land. It has to be like super clear.
Exactly. Clear and convincing is a really high bar. It means you have to show the court that it's highly probable that what you're claiming is true. It's way stronger than just saying, oh, well, it's more likely than not.
Okay, so what are those 7 magical elements?
Well, a good way to remember them is with this mnemonic, A-O-N-H-C-E-C. So it stands for actual, open, notorious, hostile, continuous, exclusive, and claim of right.
All right, so actual seems pretty straightforward. Like, you actually have to be on the land using it.
Right, and open and notorious, those are about visibility. It can't be sneaky about it. Your use of the land has to be obvious to anyone who's paying attention. Like, if the real owner were to walk by, they'd be like, hey, what's going on here?
So no secret gardening in the middle of the night.
Not if you want to claim adverse possession. And then you have continuous. This means you can't just pop in every once in a while. It has to be a consistent pattern of use over time.
Makes sense. So what about exclusive? Does that mean you have to be the only one using the land?
Exactly. Exclusive means you're acting like the sole owner. No sharing, no letting other people use it without actual owner's permission.
Got it. Okay, now we get to the tricky ones. Hostile. That sounds a bit aggressive.
I know, right? But in this context, hostile doesn't mean you're, like, getting into fights with the real owner. It's more about using the land without their permission and acting like you have the right to be there.
So it's more about, like, defiance than anger.
Exactly. And in Rhode Island, this idea of hostile possession gets really interesting. It basically comes down to visible boundaries. Like, if you're using land up to a fence line, even if you don't know the exact legal property line, that's considered hostile.
So even if you're accidentally on their land a little bit, but you're acting like that fence is the boundary.
Yep, that counts as hostile in this context. And a lot of times, cases hinge on this question of, like, implied permission versus straight-up trespassing. Did the owner, even implicitly, give you the okay to use their land? Or were you totally out of line?
Okay, that makes sense. So what about claim of right?
Claim of right is all about your mindset. You have to be using the land with the intention of claiming it as your own, not just borrowing it, not just trespassing while knowing it's not yours. You have to be acting as if you are the rightful owner.
So 7 elements all have to be proven beyond just a reasonable doubt, but by clear and convincing evidence, that's a tough standard.
It is. And it's a big reason why adverse possession cases can get so tricky. They're super fact specific. And it often comes down to, like, little details and nuances.
Okay, so let's circle back to the Supreme Court's decision in Cassina. We talked about how they basically said, nope, no summary judgment here. So help me understand that. What's the big deal with summary judgment anyway? Why did the Supreme Court care so much about that?
Summary judgment is this crucial tool in our legal system because it's all about efficiency. If there's no real argument about the key facts of a case and the law clearly points to one outcome, a judge can just decide the case right then and there without going through a whole trial.
So it saves everyone a lot of time and money.
Exactly. But the key here is that there can't be any real dispute about the important facts. Like, if it's clear who did what, when they did it, and there's no debate about the evidence, then summary judgment might be appropriate.
So the Supreme Court thought there were still questions about those key facts in Cassina.
Absolutely. They were like, hold on, there's still stuff we need to figure out here before we can just hand a win to one side.
What specifically were they hung up on?
Well, they had 3 big reasons for overturning that summary judgment. The first was what they called boundary confusion.
So, like, they weren't clear on where the land actually was?
Basically, yeah. They said the surveys that the casinos had provided weren't specific enough. Like, they didn't clearly define exactly what areas they were claiming.
So if you're saying, this land is mine because I've been using it up to this line, you have to be able to show exactly where that line is.
Precisely. You need that clear demarcation. Without it, the court was like, how can we even say they were possessing the land hostily up to a specific boundary if we don't even know where that boundary is?
Makes sense. What was the second reason?
So the second thing the Supreme Court took issue with was that the trial court had actually tried to resolve those boundary disputes. Remember how they ordered a new survey and held that evidentiary hearing?
Yeah, I thought that was being thorough.
It was, in a way. But the Supreme Court was like, that's not your job at this stage.
Yeah.
They're basically saying, the whole point of summary judgment is to decide if a trial is even necessary. If you're already digging into the facts and holding hearings, then clearly there's a dispute that needs to be resolved at a full trial.
So the trial court kind of jumped the gun a bit.
In a way, yeah. They were already acting like the fact finder, which isn't their role when they're just deciding on a motion for summary judgment. That's what a trial is for.
Okay, and the third reason?
The third reason was about the evidence itself. The Supreme Court just didn't think the Casinas had presented enough strong evidence to meet that clear and convincing standard for adverse possession.
Ah, so they were like, your arguments are interesting, but you need more to back them up.
Exactly. They pointed out potential problems with the Casinas' affidavits, like maybe some inconsistencies or things that didn't quite add up. And they said the surveys were too vague to really nail down exactly what property they were talking about.
So it was a problem of, like, quantity and quality of evidence.
Exactly. And this goes back to what we were saying about adverse possession being so fact-specific.
Mm-hmm.
You need really solid evidence to win those cases, especially when you're trying to do it through summary judgment.
And there was that really great quote from Justice Goldberg in the Supreme Court's opinion.
Oh, yeah. He totally nailed it. He wrote, without clear demarcation, there can be no summary judgment.
Short, sweet, and to the point.
Yeah. And it really highlights how important it is to have those boundaries nailed down. Like, if you can't clearly show what land you're claiming, you're going to have a hard time convincing a court to just give you a win without a trial.
So are you saying that courts are generally hesitant to grant summary judgment in these types of cases? Like, is that a takeaway here?
Absolutely. Adverse possession claims are notoriously messy. They often involve, like, decades of history, conflicting memories, and fuzzy boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to sort all that out just based on paper filings. You often need to hear from witnesses, see how they respond to questions, and get a full picture of what happened.
Okay, so big lessons learned. Any other key takeaways for all the aspiring lawyers out there?
I think the biggest one is just how crucial it is to have your ducks in a row when it comes to evidence, especially in a case like this where you're dealing with adverse possession. Make sure your surveys are precise, make sure your witnesses are telling a consistent story, and make sure all your documents are supporting your claims. Because if there's any wiggle room, any ambiguity, the other side is going to exploit it.
So dot your I's and cross your T's.
Exactly. And the other big takeaway is to be really strategic about when you push for summary judgment. It can be tempting to try to end the case quickly, but if there are genuine factual disputes, you might be better off just going to trial.
Don't try to force a shortcut if it's not there.
Right. Because like we saw in Casina, if you try to take a shortcut and the court says no, you've basically shown your whole hand to the other side, and you might end up in a worse position than if you'd just gone to trial in the first place.
So Casina v. DiPetrillo, a case about adverse possession, but also a case about procedure, strategy, and really understanding the nuances of the law.
Absolutely. It shows how even in a seemingly simple property dispute, things can get really complex really fast. And for law students especially, I think it's a great example of how all these different areas of law, like property, civil procedure, and evidence, all come together in practice.
It's not just about knowing the rules, it's about knowing how to use them.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for breaking all that down. Super insightful stuff.
My pleasure. Always happy to dive deep.
All right. And for all you listeners out there, think about this. How might things have played out differently in Casina if the Casinas had been able to present that really rock-solid evidence right from the start? Would the Supreme Court have been more likely to uphold the summary judgment? It's something to ponder. And that's it for this week's Deep Dive. We'll see you next time.